on top of a ridge in the southeast of England, a young Anglo-Saxon housecarl struggles to maintain his footing. It's not the ground that's the problem, though it's getting muddier by the minute. No, he's surrounded on all sides by large barrel-chested soldiers armed to the teeth with spears, swords, and giant double-handed axes. As they jostle for a better view of the Norman enemy at the foot of the hill, the young soldier is almost bowled over. It doesn't help that he's exhausted, having been constantly on the go for the past 3 weeks, marching all the way up to York to confound and smash a Viking army in a brutal slogging match, and then all the way back down south to where they stand now, to give battle to yet another enemy. The young soldier has seen a lot in that time. The look of sheer disbelief on the faces of the Vikings, dumbfounded that Harold Godwinson and his Anglo-Saxon army could launch an attack on them so soon. Then came the desperate and ferocious fight these same Vikings had put up. But perhaps the most incredible spectacle of all, in what would become the Battle of Fulford, was the heroic feat of an enormous Viking warrior who, standing alone on a bridge, had held the Anglo-Saxons off with his immense battle axe, smashing, crushing, and decapitating man after man until someone smart enough had gotten under the bridge in a small boat and had thrust his spear up into him. The young soldier marvels that he's made it this far. He chucks it up to the fact that he's been trained by the best, the cream of the Anglo-Saxon army, the housecarls. But even so, many of his comrades have not been so lucky, and their ranks have been considerably thinned over the last few weeks. These battle-weary survivors now stare down hard at the Norman army arrayed below them. Yells and curses hammer at the air, and a sudden sharp blast from a trumpet whirls up the hill. This can mean only one thing. It's time for the young housecarl to dig deep, and with one last effort, help rid England of the last of its enemies. Behold, the Battle of Hastings. Part 2, The Crisis. It's 8:30 a.m. The Norman army has almost taken up its positions. There's a loud clattering and clanging of weapons and armor as spearmen, swordsmen, archers, crossbowmen, and horsemen line up as best they can in the cramped and marshy confines of the battleground. They stand roughly 300 meters away from the Anglo-Saxon shield wall above. Duke William and a number of other horsemen thunder round to the front of the army. William's face is steely and purposeful. He is a man hell-bent on one goal: to eliminate Harold and all vestiges of the Anglo-Saxon leadership. William looks upon his men in silence for a few moments, his banners either side of him, waving in the light breeze. "Normans, bravest of nations," he suddenly starts. "I have no doubt of your courage, and none that you'll be victorious this day." He trots down the Norman battle line before continuing. "Raise your standards, my brave men, and set no limits on your merited rage. May the lightning of your glory be seen and the thunders of your onset heard from east to west. You are the avengers of noble blood. Cut these treasonous shits to pieces. Show no mercy." William raises his sword, and the Norman army roar in approval. He rides back through the army to his position, sword aloft amid the dizzying energy that now enraptures his troops. Then, at 9 a.m., in accordance with church hours, the trumpets blare as battle is finally ordered. Riders fly down the ranks as men are directed forward. A third of the way up the slope, the infantry are ordered to stop, as archers and crossbowmen now filter through the gaps and move to the front. On seeing this, the Anglo-Saxon line braces. The shield wall draws in closer, and it is like a human fort on a hilltop. Battle, finally begins as the artillery loose their first arrows and bolts. They fizz through the air and begin hammering the Anglo-Saxon line. Arrows and bolts bend and snap as they make contact with shields and helmets. Some find their mark, releasing shrieks into the air. One Anglo-Saxon housecarl in the front line is suddenly struck in the neck. He topples forwards onto the slope, writhing in pain. The day's first blood trickles down the hill. But the artillery assault peters out before it's hardly begun. Some 1,500 archers, each with a quiver of around 24 arrows, have loosed 36,000 arrows in just minutes. But the majority of these arrows have either been shot into the hill at the feet of the sheer wall, or otherwise over the enemy's heads and into the scattered ranks of the Ferdmen beyond. The Norman infantry, behind the archers and crossbowmen, curse under their breath. They know they'll have to dislodge these battle-hardened veteran housecarls themselves. Archers and crossbowmen now rush to the back of the line, filtering through the gaps whence they came. The trumpets begin blaring again, ordering the infantry to advance. They toil wearily up the slope. The air rings with the swaying of chainmail and clanging of metal weapons. As they get nearer, the clamor of shouts and cries from the Anglo-Saxon line coalesces into a sonorous call of "Out! Out! Out! Out!" The terror is sickening. Some of the men momentarily close their eyes to ask God for one last blessing. Others are grappling with the fear in the pit of their stomach. Suddenly, somebody cries out, "Dexay!" Others now join in, "Dexay!" "God help us," they shout. These encouraging words will carry them through the Anglo-Saxon killing zone that they are about to enter. The attackers, now just 25 meters away from the Anglo-Saxon sheer wall, come under a withering missile attack. Arrows whiz past their heads as they speed up to a charge. Soon, it's not just the arrows, but spears that crash into them too. Large numbers of Norman soldiers begin falling to the ground. One spear, thrown with enough power, punches through a Norman soldier's chainmail. The skewered soldier falls awkwardly, staring wide-eyed at the shaft protruding from his stomach. The barrage is relentless. Eager to escape the onslaught, Norman soldiers surge forward to finally close with the sheer wall. In the final 5 meters, arrows and spears are now joined by axes and even rocks pulled from the hill itself. In one instance, a throwing axe whooshes through the air and plants itself in the neck of a Norman soldier. Moments later, the two lines finally make contact. Parts of the Anglo-Saxon sheer wall are momentarily pushed backwards under the pressure of the Norman charge, but then soon snap back into position. Shield against shield, the battle becomes a shoving match of brute force and sheer weight of numbers. Men sway back and forth in the immense press of bodies. A giant rock comes down on the skull of one Norman soldier, flattening his helmet and showering those around him in blood. Men on both sides thrust their spears over enemy shields, or otherwise stab upwards from under them with knives and daggers. Weapons, shields, and garments begin to soak with blood. A Norman soldier glimpses a small gap in the sheer wall, into which he immediately plunges his sword. A scream from the other side tells him he's hit home. But even as the blood drains from our young Anglo-Saxon housecarl, and he loses consciousness, he doesn't fall. The pale faces of the dead and dying are held upright in the press of battle. The battle rages on with unrelenting ferocity. After just half an hour, some parts of the Norman line are already beginning to falter and disengage out of sheer exhaustion. On seeing this, Duke William, nervously watching from horseback at the foot of the hill, issues orders to ready the cavalry. They are to charge in support of the ailing infantry. Soon, small contingents of 20 to 25 knights, known as conroys, begin to surge up the hill. Each conroy is in the command of a Magister Militum, a master of knights, whose leadership is signalled by colourful Gonfanon flags. With a combination of sharp trumpet calls, bellowed voice commands, and the deft use of these Gonfanon flags, the Magister Militum could expertly manoeuvre his riders, carving a path of destruction through the enemy lines. Back at the Shield Wall, the fighting is desperate. Men on both sides are exhausted. The ground soaked with blood now becomes mud, making it hard to find stable footing. The battle doesn't seem to be going anywhere. But then, the thunderous call of approaching hooves signals a significant development in the battle, as large contingents of Norman horsemen begin charging up the hill. The housecarls at the front of the Anglo-Saxon line attempt to parry this new attack by launching another barrage of missiles. But the nimble horsemen, unlike the infantry before them, manage to wheel away. Anglo-Saxon arrows, spears, and axes litter the hill. As the missile supply of the Anglo-Saxons begins to dry up, the Norman horsemen turn to engage again. They ride at the Shield Wall with their spears aloft. Indeed, the practice of the mounted knight charging with his lance couched under his arm was not yet a common sight on the battlefield. Instead, Norman cavalry employed a different technique, either throwing or thrusting their spears from above, using their height advantage over the enemy to amplify their force. But despite their impressive agility, the Norman cavalry, like the archers and infantry, also prove unable to break through the staunch resistance of the Anglo-Saxon Shield Wall, and many of them are hacked down just as they are about to pivot away from danger. In another episode, a housecarl in the second rank, a colossal behemoth of a man, brandishes a menacing-looking weapon. This was the fabled Danish axe, otherwise known as the broadaxe, a specialized weapon with a long wooden haft and a vicious iron or steel head, sporting a sharp 10-inch blade on one side and a piercing point on the other. The housecarls were renowned for their mastery in wielding these lethal axes to devastating effect on the battlefield. The giant housecarl sights an isolated Norman horseman. Seeing his chance, he pushes through the Shield Wall and goes to intercept him. The Norman knight spots the danger, however, and desperately throws his spear at the man, but misses. Then, the housecarl whirls his axe in a deadly figure of eight before delivering a single devastating blow that severs the horse's neck. Blood now gushes onto the battlefield. The horse flops to the ground, and the rider is hurled from his saddle down the hill. The rider shakily gets up as two or three other Anglo-Saxons now make a start for him, eager to finish the job. But they are gruffly called back by some of the veterans. They absolutely cannot disrupt the integrity of the Shield Wall. The very battle depends on it. Meanwhile, the Norman knight scrambles to his feet, clutching at his dislocated arm. He glances back at his dismembered mount and the blood-soaked housecarl that now stands over it, before scurrying back down the hill to the Norman lines. With the bodies piling up, men exhausted from battle, and the assault failing to make any headway, panic now starts to set in. The panic takes hold on the Normans' left flank, as small numbers of Bretons, Watavins and Angevins begin to back away, with some falling back down the hill. This trickle soon gives way to a flood as men now stream back towards the valley. The Norman soldiers in the center are forced to disengage, wary of an attack on their increasingly exposed left flank. The Norman troops are forced to look on as an appalling spectacle begins to unfold right in front of them. Infantry and horsemen from their left wing are now fleeing down the hill, while Anglo-Saxon thirdmen give chase. The retreating left wing run into the marshy territory at the foot of the hill and are mercilessly cut down by the pursuing thirdmen. Meanwhile, a handful of retreating cavalry head towards the elevated ground of the small hillock that punctuated the downward slope. But with the pursuing thirdmen close behind, they are forced up and over it, causing them to crash and flounder in the small stream on the other side. In the chaos, shouts are heard proclaiming that Duke William has been killed. Heads begin to twist this way and that in bewilderment, utterly unsure of what to do. The Norman center are now more than anxious, with many of them anticipating an imminent rout. The Flemish soldiers on the right wing have also disengaged by this point, as the rumor continues to spread down the line that the Duke is dead. Could this be the start of the disintegration of the whole Norman army? Could this be the beginning of a merciless and bloody retreat to the coast, where thousands of Norman soldiers are hewn down by giant axes and butchered by Saxon Scrammasax daggers? This would mark the critical point in the battle for the Normans. Next time, we'll see how the crisis meets its blood-soaked conclusion. We'll follow the rest of the brutal battle of attrition up to its climax on the heights of the ridge. And we'll see how the hopes of the Normans come close to literally falling off a cliff. Tune in to the next and final episode to find out.